we did not feel qualified to raise a child, but here we are. And they throw you out into the world and they say, go figure it out. And yeah, we fall a lot, my friends. We learn so much of what not to do. We have learned things that go well, and we're going to keep doing those things, but we will not be perfect in anything that we do. But if we keep falling and learning, we are going to get better. But if we keep falling and doing the same thing over and over, we will not be getting better. We will actually be staying stagnant. Hey, I'm Ashley Agle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off.
How has it been an entire year? I have no idea. But I'm recording this a week before Barrett's birthday. And this time last year, I wasn't recording anything. I was about to give birth. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get emotional in this episode. And I told myself I wouldn't. But this time last year, I had no idea where I was going to be right now. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I swear I was literally just holding him in the hospital. And it is a year later. He is so big. He's so smart. He's growing so fast. I am not the same person I was last year at this time recording episodes. We just didn't know what we were getting into. And you know it. Like, you parents that are listening, this entire time you've known it. You've been through it all, there and back. You're going through different things right now with your athlete, your child, your children. And it's so funny because I know before I had Barrett, I would always say in episodes, like, I don't understand you yet, not completely. And obviously, I still don't fully understand you because you have older athletes that are, you know, in the thick of the game. And that's why I record these. And we have so long to go. But this has been the fastest year of my life, but also the longest year of my life. Can anybody explain this to me? This has been a whirlwind, the biggest blessing, the hardest thing I've ever done. And I thought college athletics was hard. But we're here. And I feel like I just left the hospital and we were just buckling him into his car seat that he didn't really fit into. What in the world? So this episode, I'm recording it, like I'm video recording it. I am putting this on a podcast because podcasts live forever. And this is going to kind of be that little documentation of our journey. And I wanted to devote an entire episode to 12 lessons that I've learned from my one-year-old from this first year together. I know we still have a week left, but and every day he's learning something new. But this is going to be my document. So I'm going to be making this kind of for Barrett so we can kind of laugh about some of this stuff later, but also for you, maybe to give you a little bit of that perspective of what your athlete was like when they were so little and harmless at first. You know, they were harmless, and now, you know, some of you have teenagers and I get it. I get it because I work with your teenagers, but I think this would be kind of be just a cool little hangout where we can kind of bond maybe over some of these things we've experienced. But again, kind of like go back to remember how innocent they used to be. And maybe there's that little piece of them that we need to find again, where they still need us, because the majority of your athletes still need you, obviously in different ways, but man, this has been a crazy year. Crazy year. So let's get into it. Let's get into it. And here's the deal. I am giving you 12 in this episode, and I've come up with like a gazillion more. And I'm actually going to put the rest of them into the When the Cleats Come Off Facebook group. So if you're not a member of that already, go join. I put the link in the show notes. But hang out with us there and we can kind of bond over our stories of our crazy kids. I think it'd be fun. All right, so let's go. First lesson that I've learned from my one-year-old is who the heck cares what other people think? Who cares what people think of your parenting style? I think that, yes, your family should have a little input, a little bit. But even then, like my parents, when they raised me and my sisters, like things are different now. A few things, not a ton, but a lot of things. And a lot of times I sit there in a restaurant and, you know, I used to really care about like what the people around us were thinking, but now I really don't care. You know, in a elderly woman has an opinion about my child who's, you know, chucking some food or yelling. I'm sorry, but this is life and we're in the thick of it. And it's not very encouraging when you roll your eyes at me. But first of all, I don't actually care because my kid's healthy. My kid's eating food. I know he's chucking some stuff, but I used to care early on what people thought and I was always in anxiety mode. And so now we go to a restaurant and he's being a little fussy. Yeah, I'm going to console him. I'm going to figure out what's wrong. But I don't really care about the people sitting to our left and our right as much. Like, yes, I understand when there's like a limit. But people are always going to have things to say. People are always going to want to share their opinions. And at the end of the day, like it's my husband and I that are in this together and we're working to make decisions together. And we're not always making the right decision. But we're not going to do things just to please other people. And we used to do that all the time in church. Like, yes, we're going to go to the cry room when he's going nuts. But, you know, people don't actually care as much. Like normally, people around you don't normally care as much as you think that they care. So I've learned to just not really care, you know, about the people around me as much. Again, there's boundaries and limits, but I feel so much better about taking my kid in public now because, you know, we're all going through it and I don't want to not take him in public just because I don't want to displease people. Like, no, like this is our life. This is how we have to go to the grocery store like everybody else. It's life and most people get it. So I've decided not to have anxiety around what other people are thinking. Instead, yes, give them a wave, let them know that, you know, they're there. But just keep doing what you're doing, right? There's no perfection here, but I used to be a people pleaser growing up. I've said that on the podcast, but you know, now it's like a whole nother level of I will not live this life to please people. I will try to make my son as comfortable as possible. I will, you know, apologize when apologies need to be done or said. If he accidentally pulls somebody's hair on the airplane, he was close to that. He never actually did it, but you're not going to please everybody. Keep your kid healthy. Keep them happy. Who cares what anybody else thinks? All right. I had to start off with a big one. Number two, stay curious. My little one is obsessed with everything that he's never seen before. If we introduce him to a new toy, he is attached to that toy for an entire week. And it's like, that's the only thing that matters right now. So I'm going to talk a little bit later about toys and how we have to experiment with what to play with because there is such thing as overwhelm. But, you know, he's crawling under and into small spaces. He's touching everything. He is putting everything in his mouth, which we have to definitely moderate. But he's just curious. He wants to go into every nook and cranny and see it for himself and try things out. And if I keep him in his playpen all day, he's not going to be able to absorb the space around him and learn how to deal with certain scenarios and places. And we literally this morning went on a play date with some friends to this local, this thing is awesome. It's like this massive play area, and there's a toddler station, and then there's like one for older kids. And Barrett got to socialize a little bit and get curious and climb on things and, you know, touch things he's never touched before. And it's like, it's just new. And I need to, and I know as a mom now, I need to expose him to new and different things so he doesn't get bored with his surroundings. And so just his curiosity is so fun to keep up with. As a curious person myself, like this is why I love interviewing people on this podcast. If you can't tell, I just love learning how people think and how they act and what made them great. And that curiosity muscle, I always want to keep. And I think throughout his life, I just want to keep making sure that I'm exposing him to new things, trying new sports, trying new cereals, like keep trying new things. And that curiosity muscle, I want to keep flexing. So thanks, Barrett, for teaching me that one. Stay curious. Okay, the third one I learned early on, and I'm still learning it. Frustration means that we're very close to a breakthrough. When he was on his back, didn't know how to roll over yet, you could tell he like wanted to, and he was trying, and he was like, oh, like getting fussy because he just knew he wanted to move and didn't know how yet. And, you know, right now when he's trying to, he has like all these different pegs, and you guys have all seen these, like there's a star peg, there's a circle, it's like all these different shapes, squares. And when he tries to put the star one in the square one and it doesn't go in, he gets frustrated and he keeps trying, and he hasn't gotten, like he's gotten the circle in the circle. That's about as far as we've gotten, but like, you can tell it's like frustrating his brain. But he's going to keep trying. And it's that persistence. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself, but he keeps trying new things and he keeps getting frustrated and he can't reach something sometimes and he gets on his tiptoes and he's trying really hard and he can't get there and he's mad. But I've learned through the rollover stage and then the crawling stage, it's like right when they're getting frustrated means that right around the corner, they're about to figure it out. And I think that that happens with me all the time. It's like when I'm really frustrated about, you know, some part of work or podcasting that I'm trying to figure out, and I just keep trying to figure it out, and I'm keep trying to figure it out, keep trying to figure it out. I know that this frustration means that I'm very close to where I want to be. And I see this with athletes all the time in the cage. When they're having a really hard time with a drill that I introduce to them, what they want to do is just stop doing the drill because that means they won't be frustrated anymore. But what do we do the next time we meet? We do the drill again, and we do the drill again. And yes, they're frustrated the first few times that they do it. But then as soon as they figure it out, it's like the best feeling ever. It's so exciting. So I think that what we can learn from that is like keep doing things even when it's hard, even when it's frustrating, because the more you do it, the more you have this figure it out mentality. And I'm telling you, the reward on the other side of it is great and it's awesome. Now Barrett can crawl. Now Barrett can reach new spaces. He's going to figure out the whole pegs and the whole thing, and that'll be so fun. But I've been studying, and he doesn't have to know that yet in his stage of 1 year. It's a little later on. But of course, we're still going to keep trying it. But frustration is not always a bad thing. It's probably means you're right on the other side of, or you're really close to a breakthrough. All right, number four. This is kind of the breakthrough thing that I was getting ahead of myself on, but keep reaching for things. I was thinking about this from like a little bit deeper level, but remember when I was saying he was reaching for stuff and like couldn't get it? Well, he's growing. His arms are getting longer. He's learning how to get to that place. And honestly, his persistence is like incredibly admirable. When he has his crib, not right next to the door, but it's kind of close to the door. And for a long time, he was trying to reach out of his crib to grab the door, and forever he could not get it. It was too far. But he kept trying. Every time we went for bedtime, he would try it and he wouldn't get there, and then he'd fall asleep. And then the next day, same thing. He'd try for it, wouldn't get there, fall asleep. Now he is getting to the door. slamming the door, slamming it open, slamming it shut, all the things. And it makes him happy. And without him continuing to try to do that, he wouldn't find this joy. And I think that one thing that I've learned from this is like, okay, keep going for the thing, even if you can't reach it yet, even if it's not meant for you to get it yet, keep going for it, keep trying. Because again, there's a lot of joy on the other side of figuring it out. You know, same thing for things on the shelf. He used to always try to go for this thing on the shelf. And yes, my shelves are, in case you're wondering, my shelves are screwed to the wall because I know there's going to be a day where he tries to climb these shelves. But there was one of his toys, I think I put on like a top shelf, one that he doesn't really care about anymore. But he was like, oh no, I know that toy. I want it. And I was like, you know, it'd be kind of fun is just leave it there. Like, see if he still goes for it. And same thing. He kept going for it. He kept going for it. Now he's taller. Now he's able to stand up a little longer, get on his tiptoes. He got the toy. And I wasn't planning on talking about this, but it's almost like you kind of find your own joy. You know that when you get that, you're going to be able to play with it and use it and have fun with it. And yes, probably get bored with it in the future. It's pretty admirable to be able to see him want something and go really hard for it and then get it. And I know this probably cliche, but that's what goals are. Like when you want something bad enough, you keep going for it. You don't stop trying. And if I were to just give him that toy, there would be no gratification. Like there'd probably be like an instant gratification of like, yes, I have a toy, but he didn't even work for it, you know? And that probably sounds mean that I'm like holding out toys for him to figure out how to get them. But I truly think any great thing that I've achieved in my life, any great thing that maybe you've achieved in your life, it came with a little struggle, kind of like number three that we were just talking about. But when you go for it and you keep going and you don't stop, and then you get it, it's like, dang, that feels good. Like one of my athletes just hit her first home run. She's like, all that work, all that struggle was so worth it to hit that ball. It's kind of the same thing. All right, number five. I've talked about this before, but food is king. Food is king. It's queen. It's everything. Food solves so many things. It feels like it solves everything, actually. Because a hangry Barrett, his nickname is Bear. So a hangry bear is not a pleasant bear. No, it is nothing matters except for food, whether it's milk, whether it's his puffs that I shove down his face whenever I need to have him distracted in the kitchen. I'm like, here, eat some puffs. When he has those, all is good. All is great. And then he mellows out. And then he starts dancing two songs in the kitchen. And I really think that this piece I want to implement into my life, especially later when he's, you know, frustrating me after a tough game. And I just want to talk about all the things that, you know, maybe he didn't do great. But then I need to realize that, you know, when you exert yourself so much in a game and you're so tired, you need food. You need food, you need fuel, you need water, you need all of these things before you're in a good place to probably talk about it. And Sue Inquist talked about it like way early on in the season one episode. She was a two-parter, but she talked about it like, hey, food should be the first priority after a game, after they've worked hard, after they're tired. I mean, shoot, when he plays in the yard for a while, like he's going to need food and, you know, he might have a meltdown if he doesn't get it. And I think going back to my own career, food was always priority before anything else. And I think when it wasn't, things got a little ugly and highly emotional. So let's prioritize food, you know, before we have hard conversations or do any of that stuff. All right, we're already like halfway through at number six. This one I might start crying. I hope I don't, but I might. So the first words that came out of Barrett's mouth this year, and my husband, I don't know if he's in denial about it, and everybody told us, hey, Papa, dad, like those are probably going to be the first things that your kid says. Like they were trying to prepare me for the worst, which I don't know why that's the worst thing ever. But, you know, for some people, apparently it hurts their heart if they don't say mama first. Okay. He actually did say mama first. Ask my husband. He was trying to have him say dada. You know, I said mama every once in a while, but he did. He said mama first, which to some people, it's backwards, but he truly did it. But I was a little butthurt when everything turned into mama. Everything he was doing was mama. And now I think he understands and associates me with mama, which is fun. But as soon as he started saying that word, oh my gosh, I will do anything for this human. I mean, I knew that before he started saying this word, but there's like this whole other level of love that you start feeling when they start saying your name. And this is by far the greatest title I will ever own. I can be CEO of my company, which I am. I can be a record holder in the Guinness Book of World Records. I could win. Let's be realistic here. I could be a top podcaster on Apple Podcasts. I could be, speaking on the NFCA stages. I'm sharing with you some of my goals, by the way. I could be a speaker for NFCA. I could be a keynote speaker for an event. How fun would that be, by the way? I could be all these things. And at the end of the day, this mama title will be the only fully important thing in my entire life. He is my number one priority. Any other future kids that we have, they will be my number one priority. I want him to know, and this is where I was trying to get to with this one, because it's the greatest title I've ever had or known or will ever have, I want him to always know that he can turn to me whenever he needs something. Yes, right now, if he needs something, he crawls over to me and says, mama. Or, you know, when he's stuck, mama. When he, you know, crawls and he's getting a little tired, mama. Your kids, I firmly believe your kids are always saying your name without always saying your name. They need you without always saying your name. But I want to try to push this mama title as long as I can to be said when Barrett needs me. Like when he really needs me and knows that he needs me. I don't want to miss a single time, and I know I will, but I don't want to intentionally miss a single time where Barrett needs me and I don't show up for him. I want him to know that when he truly needs me, I will be there. And I always want him to know that. I want to give him space and environment where he can just say my name or I can learn his cues and know that he needs me and I can be there. That's my goal for you, big man. I know I'm going to fail at it. I know I'm not going to always get it right, but dang, that's a goal of mine. Okay, I didn't cry. Let's go. Now the odds of me crying later are probably pretty high. Okay, number 7, I alluded to this a little bit earlier with the toy situation, but I've learned that you can absolutely be overwhelmed with too much around you, too much stimulation. And yes, I think there's a time and a place for Bluey. Like I'm going to be interviewing somebody in a couple of days for the podcast and there will be Bluey on TV because he is the most sucked into something when Bluey is on TV. I'm okay with that because I got to get my work done too. But when we're playing in the playpen, if there's 85 toys out, which currently there actually are upstairs, there is this sense of overwhelm and he gets bored actually, I think, easier and faster when there's so much around. Cause he like plays with one thing and then he goes to the next thing and like plays with the first second and then goes to the next thing. And there's just so much. But after like sitting there in his playpen with him or just watching him, I've noticed that his focus and his growth, like the milestones that we reach, they come when there's like one toy in front of him. Like I see him really dig into that toy and see all the little intricacies and buttons and tools and all these different things. When that one toy and only that one toy is in front of him, he is way more locked in. And we signed up for this play box. It's called Love Every, thanks to Kat Osterman. She told me about it, where it's Montessori types toys. They don't have sounds. It's not like an electronic toy. It's all wooden things and they can slide and there's balls that you can throw. There's all these different things that, you know, the studies of their sensory needs are basically met in each stage in each box that they send you. And they keep saying, and I'm reading that it says just introduce one toy at a time. Don't give them the entire box because they won't actually get to know what that specific thing is truly meant for if you're given all of them at once. And I learned from that, like, that's how every toy should be. Yes, he has favorites. He has toys that he wants more than others. But if we want him to actually grow at the rate that he can, you can't just like throw everything at them. You have to give them one thing to learn how to use and yeah, eventually kind of get bored with before introducing something brand new. So overwhelm is real. As someone with undiagnosed ADHD, I work a lot better when I have one task in front of me and not three or 30. Being a mom is very hard because, you know, you have to have your priority on your kid while also you're trying to, you know, send a newsletter out every Friday to your newsletter. It's tough for me to focus, but, you know, when I have one thing in front of me, I'm way more productive. So that's something that I've learned. One toy at a time for Barrett means maximum growth. And I need to take my own advice and focus on one thing at a time and not have 30 things going on at once where I can't give that one thing my full attention. Okay, I better wrap this up soon because I think Barrett's awake upstairs. Number 8, routines absolutely matter in our house. If Barrett is off on his nap schedule, it will not be a very good night or following day if we do not get our full nap in. Our full, you know, he sleeps about 10 hours at night and then 2 hours worth of nap. So 12 to sometimes 13 hours of sleep. We need it. We absolutely need it. If we don't get it, it is not good. So having a routine of nap schedule, having a routine of, you know, our nighttime schedule, if we just try to put him down without reading him a story, praying with him, like going through our checklist of things that we know need to be done, things just don't work out very smoothly. But when we have our routine and we stick to our routine, most of the time, things go as planned. Things go well. And what I've learned was, again, I do all this research. Sometimes it's like TikToks and reels, but when a kid can have like an exact schedule, it's like when they know that things are coming, they're not flabbergasted by new things happening. They're in a better state. And, you know, as someone who, when I write things out and schedule things, I'm way more productive. I think it comes with the confidence of knowing what's coming. Things just go smoother. So that's number 8. Now that I've changed it from a repeat to, you know, the power of having a routine, I highly recommend, even if you just have a family routine of Sunday nights or your night where you plan every hour of the next week, just to have some clarity for the week. I think having a routine, something that you can stick to, you know, whether it's bedtime routine, morning routine, planning your day, whatever, that routine, if you can kind of make it just your identity and just who you are and stick to it as much as you can. I understand there's vacations. There's some days your kid wakes up 2 hours earlier than planned. Like, it's not always going to go as planned, but when you have the routine, you kind of have more confidence. So that's number 8. All right. Number 9, this one kills me. I have to let Barrett fall. I have to let him fall. I have to let him fail. This morning, prime example, hanging out in the room and he's crawling around and he's climbing on the dresser. What does he love right now? He loves doors and he loves dressers. He loves opening and closing dressers. Okay. You guys all know where I'm going here. He was opening and closing it and he wasn't forcefully opening and shutting it. Okay. But he was kind of opening it and then closing it, opening it and then closing it. And then all of a sudden, I know, I like watched him do this. It makes me feel like a bad mom, actually. I watched him put his fingers on top of the dresser or the drawer, and he was about to shut his hands. And like, by the time you're thinking about it, it's already happening, but he shut. And again, it wasn't forceful. Definitely didn't break a finger, but like he shut the dresser into his fingers. He looked at me, gave it about 2 seconds, breakdown. Totally broke down. Okay. Killed me. My mom heart was going nuts. But, you know, after like 2 seconds, he wanted me to put him down and he was back to crawling and back to going towards the dresser. Obviously, at his age, he's not going to learn from all his mistakes. But I have to keep letting him figure this stuff out. Because if I'm constantly pulling him away from the dresser, he's not going to learn that lesson until he's super strong and starting to forcefully close it. Then he's going to smash it. I think letting him fail, like little failures, little falls, they are so important. And I'm probably going to butcher this, but I'm a big fan of Jordan B. Peterson. And I was watching this video. I tried to look it up again before I recorded, but I couldn't find it. I just have saved so many things from him. But it was talking about if we don't let them make their own mistakes and fail, they're going to fail so hard that it's going to be so much harder to help them later on in life. And I'm so glad my parents didn't coddle me. Like, there were certain things that, yes, I was a little sheltered, but, you know, they let me make my own mistakes a lot. And I'm very grateful to that now, again, being 30. But thank goodness they let me do that. And I know we're growing up in this day and age where parents don't want to see their kids get hurt. And, like, obviously, I don't want to see, you know, Barrett go through his first breakup, and I don't want him to, you know, make some of these mistakes. But, like, how the heck do we learn if we don't fall or we don't fail? Like, he's going to start walking soon. He's going to fall all the time. Yes, I'm going to make sure he's not falling on hardwood, right? Like, I don't want there to be brain damage when he hits the floor, but he's going to have to hit the floor. And yes, I can make the fall a little bit softer, but I do need to make sure that he falls so that he can learn what to do, what not to do. I don't want to see him in pain. It sucks. But without that pain, there's no learning. And that goes through our entire lives. Pain is necessary. There is such a thing as, you know, little pains. And I think they need to happen. And y'all have definitely experienced more than me, but I got to make sure that I stick to this one, which is why I'm recording this episode. All right. He's definitely awake now. So let's breeze through 10, 11, and 12, and then I'll send you to Facebook to go see my other ones. 10, hugs solve everything. We talked about how food is king. Food solves a lot. Hugs also solve a lot. Not just for him. I'm a totally different person a year after having Barrett. I have had my patience tested. I have had so many areas of my life tested. But truly the power of a hug, when I come home from work or lessons and he's supposed to be sleeping, but he's not. And then Ben hands him over to me and he just falls, like, just rests his head on my shoulder. There will never be a feeling like that. I don't think ever. So I have to make sure that I'm giving him these hugs for not just him to know that I love him and that I will always care for him and nurture him, but he's actually helping me with these hugs. You know, I could be having a really tough day and he could just be a terrible baby for a day. And then as soon as he gives me a hug, it's like everything else doesn't matter. And truly, I want to make sure that I keep giving him hugs. So that one, he can hopefully give me a bunch of hugs in the future. And I know we're going to go through stages where he's not going to want to hug me at all. And I got to just soak it in, and I'm going to, but they can solve a lot of things. So even if you're just hugging your spouse or hugging your dog, like, I think there's a lot of beautiful endorphins. I think I've researched this a time or two, but your body loves giving hugs. So keep giving them. I'm Olaf and I like warm hugs. 11 kind of goes with number 10, but when we went on our first flight with Barrett, he learned how to wave and smile at people. Like, he would see somebody and wave at them and they'd wave back and he would just be happy. And, you know, this is something that thankfully my mom is one of the most social, but friendly and positive and just great loving human beings in this life. And she's taught me the power of a smile. But these things are contagious. And, you know, whether it's picking up your coffee at your local coffee shop or checking out at the grocery store, like, your positivity can definitely reverberate into other people. And, you know, it's literally cost nothing. So I want to keep this as a reminder for all of us. Like, when we're having a hard day, someone else is probably having a harder day. And you don't know what other people are going through. And yes, when you sometimes give a smile to someone, they're not going to smile back. But when you can actually change the mood of other people by smiling or waving at them to make them feel happy, you don't have to just be a one-year-old to make other people happy with a smile. Trust me, I practice this often. You can help other people. And when you make someone else's day, it really kind of makes you feel great too. So let's do a little bit more of that. I know there are going to be days where you don't want to do it, but I've never regretted sharing a smile with someone, even if they didn't really want it, right? Like, I've never regretted doing that. So be that person that can help spread joy. Little kids obviously have the advantage here. They can do it so easily, but it definitely is something we all should be doing more. Number 12, the biggest lesson that I've learned is I will never be a perfect mom. Never. I am never going to be a perfect mom. I will try to be as perfect as possible. I'm going to keep learning what not to do because I do a lot of things that I shouldn't do and don't really know. Like, I saw this reel the other day and it was so funny. It was these people getting off of a ski loft. And the first person literally fell off the ski loft and I think landed on their face. The other person, their ski got stuck into the ground and then they tumbled and fell. And it said, parents that are leaving the hospital, this is like the perfect scene of parents leaving a hospital, not knowing or like just falling and just, it's nuts. That has been our life so often in this past year because they literally send you out into the world. We did not feel qualified to raise a child, but here we are. And they throw you out into the world and they say, go figure it out. And yeah, we fall a lot, my friends. We learn so much of what not to do. We have learned things that go well and we're going to keep doing those things, but we will not be perfect in anything that we do. But if we keep falling and learning, we are going to get better. But if we keep falling and doing the same thing over and over, we will not be getting better. We will actually be staying stagnant. And my husband and I are very driven people. We're very competitive people. We know that it's our job to raise a freaking awesome human. And that's what our goal is. And we're doing our dang best, but we always can be doing better. And what we're great at is making sure that we hold each other accountable in so many ways. Because I would hate for us to just crush these first few years and then just get tired and not really care or work on our kid and make sure that he's growing up to be a social person, to be, you know, a strong and confident person, to be a leader in some areas. Like, this is our job and it is the hardest job. And first of all, I am so proud of you for going through what you have, but I am also going to hold you accountable and say, do not settle. When things are tough, do not settle. And I know some of you have teenagers and it's the hardest time ever. That's what I keep hearing and learning. It's so hard to raise a teenager. But you got through the first year of life and that was hard. It was so hard. But we're learning. We keep learning his cues. And as he gets older, he's going to have new cues. And at the end of the day, I always want to make sure Barrett knows that we love him, even with our imperfections. I'm going to share all the time what I have done wrong, because if I can share some of my vulnerabilities and things that I didn't get right, he is going to be able to share those things and not hold them inside of him for his whole life. So that's our 12. All right. And again, I've come up with at least 5 more and I'll share all of those inside of the When the Cleats Come Off Facebook community. But this is where we're at. And I know we have a long way to go. I know you're all probably thinking that, like, this is just the beginning. But dang, I want to document this because we have learned so much. I probably could have added 100 more things to this list. We have a lot more to learn. I totally know that. And if you want to share some of the things that you've learned in some of these next stages, shoot them into the Facebook group. I'm down to hear and learn anything that you've learned. But at the end of the day, I made this episode for Barrett. And I want him to know, and I want you to know. I'm looking at my screen, like, this is Barrett that I'm talking to right now. I am so proud of you. I can't wait to keep being your mom. And I hope you have the best birthday and we can just enjoy some of these future moments together and make more memories together. Dang, this was so fun to record. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. If you have some suggestions or some things that you totally agree with or disagree with, let me know inside of the When the Cleats Come Off Facebook community. You can find that in the link in the show notes or just head to Facebook and type in When the Cleats Come Off. I'm so excited to share another episode with you next week. So do not forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling. I'll see you later.
Bobby! I just recorded an episode for you of the podcast of 12 things that you in your 1 year of life. Technically, you don't turn one for 6 days. So can you never turn one? Can you just stay like this forever? Do you have anything to say? You say hi. You recorded your first podcast. Say yeah.